So I'm going to be talking a little bit about that and then showing just a short film at the end of the presentation. So I'm based at the Public Health Institute here in Oakland. I'm the step-in moderator for this session because the other moderator had to attend another meeting. So thank you all for coming. It's great to have you here. So I'll just jump in. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the context for the work that we do. So many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with some of the challenges facing adolescent girls. Adolescent girls around the world are arguably probably one of the world's most marginalized populations. So they have tremendous levels of poverty, are often out of school youth, are victims of maternal mortality often, and there's a tremendous problem that we already heard about in terms of HIV and violence that young women and adolescent girls suffer from in many countries around the world. So obviously the challenges are enormous, and at the same time, only 2 cents of every $1 invested in international funding actually goes to programs that are focused on adolescent girls. So that just gives you a sense of, like, despite how huge this problem is, it's really not something that is either very much paid attention to or funded very well. So at the same time, we know that investing in adolescent girls provides a tremendously powerful opportunity to create change, both for those adolescent girls, their families, the children that they will go on to have, their communities, and their countries. So, for example, there's been studies that show that adolescent girls who complete 7 years of education actually get married 4 years later and have 2.2 fewer children than their uneducated counterparts. So we're not talking college, we're not even talking finishing high school, we're just talking about 7 years of basic education really can radically transform both the girl's life and her community and her country in terms of GDP and development opportunities. So we see that in the return on investment of investing in girls is enormous, and that's really the main focus, why we have the focus that we do. So the Adolescent Girls Advocacy and Leadership Initiative. We've been working now since 2009, and our goal is really to improve adolescent girls' health, education, human rights, and livelihood broadly. So it's a comprehensive approach where what we do is we bring in leaders who have the potential to create change for girls. So policy change, programmatic change, increased funding for girls. So our fellows themselves, which are being specific, are not, for the most part, girls. Some of them are younger women. But really what we're trying to do is bring in the key people that can create change for girls. So often these are organizational directors, executive directors of nonprofit organizations. They work in the UN, they work in multilateral organizations, they work in government, in a few different focus countries around the world. We work mainly in Africa and Latin America, and these are all focus countries that have been identified at the UN for target countries for concerted collaborative work on girls. And so we actually are funded by the UN Foundation, so they give money to the UN to do this work on girls, and then they give money to us to help really strengthen the civil society response to make sure that the UN's work is as effective as it can be. We all know the UN is important, but they have a lot of challenges. So the idea is really to identify the people that can help create these changes in a really systematic and effective way. Kind of what you were saying, go to the top of the waterfall. So just kind of try to catch the fall. So to give you a sense of our fellows, we also try to be really broad in who we select and who we think about to create social change. This young woman here on the bottom right is actually an Ethiopian rock star. Literally, she's actually a musician who's known throughout Ethiopia and actually most of Africa for her music. And she's really interested in hearing and learning more about girls issues and had no background in advocacy or nonprofit work or any of that stuff. But we thought, if we could have someone like that become a spokesperson for adolescent girls issues, it's kind of a perfect, she's not exactly a leadership lead, but it's that sort of effect that we were looking for. So in terms of the strategies, what we really do is bringing together these leaders who participate in intensive week-long training. So the first half of the week, they're really learning about what are the challenges facing girls, what is the legal and policy framework for girls. Because often what we see is our fellows themselves are amazing in terms of the direct service work that they do with girls, but they have much less experience and understanding of advocacy and what it is and what it can be used for and how it can be effective. So often what we see is, people who think about advocacy, they use either IEP, so information education, sort of like getting the word out, or then it's protest, right? Like major signs, go out on the street and march. And obviously those are two strategies that can work, but they're all first couple of days are kind of focused on that. And the rest of the training, they really do basically SWOT analysis of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, political mapping, and trying to figure out how to, given the needs in the country that they know, given their own strengths and capacity as an individual leader and as an organization, how can they bring those two things together to create an advocacy strategy that has the greatest chance for success? So it's a really hands-on experiential approach where they really come out of the training with a fully baked advocacy strategy already set up. So when they finish up the training, they go back to their organization, finalize their advocacy strategy, either meet with their executive director, if they're not already in that position, or their board, or kind of whoever needs to give the final, you know, buy-in and approval, and then they submit those advocacy strategies to us for funding. And we're able to award seed grant funds the best of the strategies that are followed. I should say also, our cohorts are usually about 18 to 20 people per country per year. So we award funds and then also do ongoing technical assistance to help ensure that their strategies are as effective as they can be once they start implementation. Oh, wrong direction. We also do a range of sustained support. So we do these institutional strengthening workshops where what we do is basically every 6 months, we bring together all the graduates from our program to learn about a specific additional advocacy skill that they really want to focus on. So they kind of identify what their priorities are. For example, we did one on media advocacy. So our fellows, this is a picture from the top right from that. And the first day, they really spent focused on how you write a press release, how you do a press conference. And then the second day, they actually did a press conference and did interviews with local media. So that's kind of our approach. It's like you learn something, you apply it immediately, both because obviously it increases the impact of the word, and it really enables them to develop those skills more effectively. We also support them to do direct outreach with girls and grassroots organizations. So, you know, once our fellows, they're already incredible leaders when they come into our program. And once they graduate, they really are the experts in country on advocacy for girls. So we actually provide them funding to go out and do training for groups of girls themselves on how girls can raise their own voices and advocate for their own needs, as well as for other grassroots organizations to try to build sort of a broader movement in country to do advocacy. And this last piece is skill building. So what we've seen is that often people in the country, including policymakers themselves, don't know what the policies are for the spectrum. So we've worked with folks in each country to identify what are the key policies that do affect girls, that are susceptible to affect girls, and create policy groups so that they can see our fellows can use those tools when they go out and meet with, you know, the Ministry of Health and say, hey, did you know that your own actual AIDS policy says this? And oftentimes they don't. So this is our program model, kind of how it all fits together. Up at the top are sort of the different pieces that I mentioned of the work that we do. Upside down triangle is the results that we really focus on. And then the bottom is kind of what we're working towards. So I know you can't read it, but basically we're really working towards the Millennium Development Goals 2, 3, and 5. Increased educational opportunities, equity and health access, sort of these big picture outcomes to improve girls' lives. This is on our website if you want to take a look at it later too. So in terms of specific achievement, we've got 89 fellows around the world in the 5 countries currently. They have reached over 40,000 girls with these direct services, advocacy training, capacity building work. They've actually already done outreach to over 600 grassroots organizations. One thing that we're super excited is that in 2 of the countries that we're working on, fellows have decided that they wanted to create their own advocacy network for girls. So they kind of looked at the situation and said, you know, we're each doing these different pieces of advocacy, and that's great, but what we really want to do is do that collaboratively and more effectively. So they created these advocacy networks, which I'll talk about a little bit in a minute. In terms of some of the actual policy wins, we've been amazed at the level of successful advocacy they've been able to do. Because, you know, advocacy is probably the toughest thing out there. It's much easier to build a clinic, it's much easier to do big off on them. But to actually get a law or policy in place and set and implement it effectively is a really tough thing to do. And our seed grants are actually only $10,000 a year. So it's not a ton of money to play into this advocacy work. But at the same time, our fellows have been able to get policy tasks focused on teen pregnancy prevention, sexual violence prevention. One of our, this third one here, the Indigenous Girl Democratic Participation, is a really cool model where one of our fellows based on that analysis, that what they really needed was more money for education health programs. So they actually did a really effective advocacy campaign that got their mayor to create a budgetary allocation in the annual budget, so a line item in the annual budget, that provided funding every year for girls' health and education, specifically focused for girls. So pretty amazing to think about how these girls were able to do this work. We were excited about the potential to scale it up. In Honduras, we have, like I mentioned, a national network that's focused on comprehensive sex ed and services. In Liberia, I mean, that's what the film is about, so I'm not going to spend much time talking about that. But in Malawi, our fellows, like I mentioned, created this advocacy network that's really focused on child marriage. So currently, the age of marriage in Malawi is 15, and they're trying to advocate to have it raised to 18. So that bill is actually, they're pushing right now for it to be raised by the Congress before December of this year. So we're really hopeful that that will actually come through. And they did an amazing job just getting media and kind of getting the word out there. So there's actually a South Africa-based news station that's sort of like a CNN format that's going to be doing a documentary about their work, how they created this model for both grassroots and national level advocacy for child marriage that they want to then show as a model in Africa, which we're excited to see. So lessons learned. I think one of the main pieces that makes this program successful is that we're able to find people that have capacity to create change, give them a little bit of extra skills and resources, and really respect their own priorities and their own local knowledge and their own understanding of what the needs are. So we never go in and say, hey, Malawi is going to be child marriage, in Liberia it's going to be education. You know, this is a tool and a model that they can use to really identify what the needs are and kind of decide how to move from there. So I think that's really what's led to the success. We also see that sustained support over time is key. So there are a lot of programs out there that do adolescent and girls work and training, capacity building, you know, kind of these one-day workshops. But I think what makes the difference here is that we actually provide funding to do the advocacy work. So it's one thing to teach someone to do advocacy, another thing to give them money to do it, because there's no money out there for advocacy. And so I feel like that's where our most important outcomes come from, is actually providing the direct support that they need to do the work. Also, having a long-term investment. So, like I mentioned, our grants are 1 year grants, 10,000, but we're able to provide, in most cases, we've given up to 3 years of ongoing support. So, we've actually seen that this is crucial because often these folks, like I mentioned, don't have a ton of experience in advocacy, so they jump in and are really excited and they hit a wall. And so, it's often in that second year that they're really able to have these really exciting successes that actually.
Grassroots policy, grassroots advocacy, I think is a really exciting model for creating policy change. Like I mentioned, with this group of girls in Guatemala, it's really engaging the grassroots in doing advocacy for their own needs.
We've also seen a lot of demand to expand the model. So we're focused more now on budgetary advocacy for reproductive health, which is something that we've seen as a priority in Malawi in particular. Economic empowerment for girls is something we're starting to move into in Latin America. And then child marriage.
So that's that, and I'm just going to quickly, I don't know if how the sound works on this thing, but yeah, okay, so so this is about two of our fellows in Liberia.
Children in Liberia didn't have a specific comprehensive law that protects them. So if anything happened to a child, we kind of had to dig in other laws and see how we can make the law work for children. So we needed something comprehensive that protects children because they were getting abused physically, emotionally, sexually, they're traumatized, and there was just not a lot of avenues and opportunities for them to really develop.
I felt that without a legal framework, we were just, you know, doing stuff for the sake of doing something.
In 2010, it was stuck at the House of Senate. It had been in the House of Senate for probably
2 years or so, and the momentum and the push has died down. I think a lot of people were at that point, like, let's put that issue down and worry about something else.
It was on the table. The senators had already predetermined they were going to leave it there because, according to them, we were bringing in Western ideas. We decided while we were in Alexandria, when we had the group work and while going through it, you know, I said, you know what? I think one of the areas of the policies that we brought with us that's doable is, you know, advocating for the passage of the Children's Act.
Part of the act protects girls from early marriage. They protect girls from, in a very general statement, any traditional cultural practices that could harm them physically, emotionally, socially. It gives them the right to education, so no one can pull them out of school for any reasons. It protects them from armed conflict.
The Children's Parliaments were one of the first groups that we trained. Their leadership is in Monrovia. And then in the 14 counties, we have children's assemblies.
We noticed that since the NGOs have tried in the field, it was the time for the children of Liberia to take the seat. So we came together. It started like, we would do this. We would meet every senator at this time. We would visit their sessions. We would talk to them. Even if the court was waiting for them at their car outside, we would wait for them.
And then we said, okay, let's have your presence at the Capitol every day. You know, and so the kids decided we're going to go every session day. And so that's what they did. Every Tuesday and Thursday, at least 6 of them were there, you know, until this bill was passed.
Because it was a girl-centered issue, the girls kind of owned the process. They spoke up more. A lot of them were able to relate and talk about their own stories or the stories from their friends. So it made them very passionate about, like, this thing that we are working on is about my life. And so they took it. Of course, the boys were active and involved, but I think the girls, from the standpoint that we took, the girls took this children's law as, if this law can be passed, my life will be changed.
Gives you an idea of kind of the power and the potential, I think, of bringing these people together and giving them a little bit of support to do kind of pretty amazing. I mean, I was shocked actually that they were able to get this through. We were really thrilled about it.